At Kelly Companies, it is no secret that they believe in the power of people. In an effort to help their Kellyans get to know each other a little bit better, they decided to launch the Who Do You Know campaign. The goal was simple. Kellyans were encouraged to have a conversation with someone outside of their circle. That's it. These conversations, however, have brought people together and furthered their world-class culture. Shout out to the Kellyans who have made an effort to have meaningful conversations with new friends. You can learn more about those conversations, about those amazing friends, by visiting them online at KeelyCompanies.com.
Welcome to the Live Inspired podcast with John O'Leary. John is the number one national best-selling author of the book On Fire. He's a world-class inspirational speaker, and he's the host of the Live Inspired podcast. John interviews extraordinary individuals on their life story so that you can wake up from accidental living and more fully live your life story. Here's your host, John O'Leary.
Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to the Live Inspired podcast with John O'Leary. You're in for an awesome journey during this episode. I'm just so excited to bring this gentleman, bring his story, bring an invitation to join us in authoring your version of the story at the end. Stay tuned for that. So let's get into it today. Blake Brewer is our guest. He is the founder of Legacy Letter and is on a mission to help 1 million parents write at least one well-written, meaningful, lasting legacy letter to their children. It's an amazing idea that has already positively elevated the relationships of tens of thousands of children and their parents. And at the very end of this conversation, I'll be inviting you to join us, Blake and me, on creating your very own letter. Stay tuned for more information on that. But where this letter idea came from and the profound impact that it had on Blake during a time of crisis in his life, it's simply remarkable. It's incredible. Just a few hours after the tragic death of his dad, Blake, just a teenager at the time, discovered what would be a guiding light during his grief journey. It was a life-changing letter that his dad had just completed for his son, but had not yet even shared with him. The letter was filled with fatherly wisdom and hope and guidance and encouragement and love. Today, Blake shares his story of loss and of resilience, focusing on the transformative power of legacy and love and the role of this letter that he received in not only changing his life positively going forward, but now becoming a ministry that is changing tens of thousands on its way to changing a million lives going forward. My friends, whether or not you are a parent or not, this episode is for you. You're going to love it. So let me bring my friend, soon to be your friend, onto the podcast with us, Blake Brewer. Welcome to Live Inspired with John O'Leary.
Hey, John, I'm so glad to be here today.
For our friends who have not heard my long preamble introducing you to our overall podcast, when you bump into someone in the grocery store or on a flight to give a presentation somewhere and they say, Blake Brewer, tell me about you, how do you respond to that?
The really quick like elevator pitch is I'm on a mission to help 1 million dads and moms write at least one well-written, meaningful, lasting legacy letter. And it all started with a letter my dad wrote me that changed my life. That's what I tell people.
There's no way someone could hear that and not say, tell me more about that. Like most elevator positioning statements rock us back to sleep. Yours makes us unbuckle ourselves on the fly, lean a little closer to you and say the words, tell me more about that. So I'm going to be speaking on behalf of that passenger right now, on behalf of all of our Live Inspired followers and listeners and viewers. So Blake, let's not talk about the legacy letters yet or the million lives that you're impacting yet. Let's go back to the beginning. You grew up in Texas. What part of Texas?
I grew up in Allen, Texas, born in Louisiana, second grade, moved to Allen, Texas. My dad got a job transfer. And so Allen's just north of Dallas. And then in ninth grade, we moved to Oklahoma and my dad got another job. So really graduated high school outside of Tulsa and Sand Springs.
What was life like for you growing up as a little boy in Louisiana and then Texas, then ultimately up in Oklahoma?
Life was pretty good. We had my parents, a sister and a brother. We had a pretty normal, traditional family. We went to church every single Sunday morning. Like, there was no way we were going to miss church. And, you know, we were eating meals together, playing sports. My dad was my football coach. So pretty traditional home there.
Before we talk about your dad, your mother sounds like a heroic individual too. So talk about this mother of three. What was she like as she's moving from all these various states and grabbing her kids with her?
Yeah, my mom's awesome. Love my mom. And she was just like a steady rock. And she was such an encourager in my life and believed in me and believed in my sister and brother and cooking for us, doing like all the stuff, like toting us around everywhere. She's really a person that I feel like I can talk to about anything.
Always?
I'm not going to say every single thing I can talk to her about, but for all my life, yeah. I mean, I talk to my mom to this day a couple times a week. I'll just call her. I'm like, I haven't talked to my mom a couple days, and I'll call her. And she's like, all right, tell me what's going on now. And she's like, I'm always just so amazed at the things that you're doing.
You're doing all these things. Your mother's with you and for you during childhood. And next to her is this beast of a man. I think your dad was 6'3", 230. A linebacker in college, played a little bit in the pros.
He was a tight end and drafted by the Atlanta Falcons. But his main claim to fame is that he was Terry Bradshaw's tight end at Louisiana Tech. And so they were best friends and roommates. My dad caught Bradshaw's first ever collegiate touchdown pass. I have this really cool picture of my dad and Bradshaw and President Nixon in the Oval Office.
Wow.
So if you... You probably don't remember the 19. What year were you born, John?
77.
77. So the 1970 draft, Terry Bradshaw went number one to the Steelers, which is a huge deal out of Louisiana Tech. And then my dad went in like the seventh round.
Hey, man, bottom line is your dad went. So congratulations to him going. He eventually went and said the words I do to your mother. They eventually have three kids. One of them is you. He eventually becomes your football coach. What was he like as a dad? Just growing up, what was he like as a father?
Man, I would say my dad was steady. I knew who he was, what I was going to get from him. I have a lot of memories of my dad. Like, I'd go to bed and there's my dad in there reading. And he was either reading the Bible or he was reading something about the JFK conspiracy. Like, he just loved studying that.
Then while you're playing sports and hearing about your father's theories and everything else going on in life, you're big into sports. You eventually go off from high school into college. What school did you choose and what was your major?
So went to the University of Arkansas and didn't know anything about Arkansas until I showed up. And if your listeners don't know, they have a thing called Calling the Hogs. And where you're going, woo! And the first time I ever heard that in my life, now the whole state of Arkansas knows this, but the first time I ever heard it in my life was at orientation. And I was like, what are we doing here? But then a few months later, when I did it with like 75,000 people at the football game, it was pretty awesome. But majored in accounting and got my accounting degree. That was from my dad. My dad was like, hey, you should probably get your accounting degree. Like, this is a good degree to have. Mm. And I realized, like, in the first year, I was like, there is no way I want to be an accountant, but I'll get my accounting degree.
You come home now knowing how to call the hogs. You come home freshman year. Your mother is a wonderful planner. She's got this awesome vacation planned with the family, your two siblings, your father out to Hawaii. What were you thinking as a 19-year-old kid getting ready to go out to Hawaii?
It was like vacation of a lifetime for us, Mike. We were pretty fired up.
I'm just going to fast forward a little bit. We'll get you off the plane, into your swim trunks, and onto the beach. May 23rd, 2003. Just take us back to that day. And what were you doing?
First day that we were there, decided to go snorkeling at Hanama Bay. And so it was my mom, my sister, my brother on the beach. And then it was me and my dad out there in the water. And there was just nowhere else in the world I wanted to be, especially being away from my dad and my family at college. And so to like, it's the first week home and we go to Hawaii and now it's just like me and my dad out there in the water. And we're looking at all the cool fish and we just kept going further and further out. And we ended up in an area that I now know is called Witch's Brew. And there was this moment where I realized I don't see my dad anymore. And I panicked. I felt really alone out there. And so I'm looking for him, like, where did he go? And I'm scanning the water and I eventually see him. And I could tell that he was struggling and he began to yell for help. My dad had this like really big, deep, booming voice, but this like yell for help was like I've told people that it's just, it was like a whimper. And so I knew he was struggling. And so I swam to him as quickly as I could. And by the time I reached him, he was underneath the water and he was unconscious. And so I put my arms around him, pulled him back up. And in this moment, I'm like, what in the world is happening right now? And it's just, everything was going so fast, and began to swim with him to the shore. And I had this moment where I was like, I'm not going to make it. Like the shore is so far away. And a nearby snorkeler showed up and began to help me get my dad to shore. And then the lifeguard showed up. They had seen what was happening, and I'm so grateful they did. And they got my dad on the surfboard. They took him in and they started doing CPR. I did the only thing I knew to do. I began to cry out to God. Like, God, would you please save my dad's life? And John, I really thought that my dad was going to come to. Like, I've seen the movies, like surely, like his eyes about to flicker open and the water's going to come out of his mouth. But it never happened. And so my dad drowned that day.
You have and had a strong faith, and you're next to your father. He's not moving, and there's a lifeguard working on him. There's a snorkeler who guided you in. I think even the fact that guy sees you and scoots over to you and saves your life by Absolutely. Taking your father from you is stunning. But you're praying to God for what you desire, man, your father's life. And you want to hear that sound of the gurgle that you've seen in a million Baywatch episodes. For the folks listening right now, and they say, you know, I don't know about this God, and I certainly don't know about this prayer, and I don't know what about this kid who's being interviewed right now by O'Leary and this prayer that he's offering up. If they're saying to you right now, like, where was God for you? What's your response to them?
Well, I had to wrestle through that, because in the next few hours, as we went back to the condo, like we kind of all went to our own rooms, and I'm just sitting there like, God, where were you? Like, how did this happen? Like, God, if you truly loved us, if you're truly in control, like how did this happen in this way? And then can I share what happened next?
You can, but I'm going to take you back to even before these words from your mom, the final words you heard from your father. Would you share those first? In fact, you're on the beach. You've already been out with the family. You all come back in, and then your dad decides to take one more swim. He starts walking off by himself, and his loyal 19-year-old son skedaddles him behind him, and he turns around, gives you a smile. What does he say?
I'm sitting there, and he was about to go off by himself. I decided to run up to him and go with him. And he said, man, I'm glad you decided to join me. And it just had this like smile on his face. Man, it made me feel like $1 million, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh man, my dad is glad that I'm out here with him. And we headed off into the water. And so that was really his final words to me.
The reason to me, and this whole story is so emotional, man, the more I prep for it, the more emotional I got every single time I wrote down a new question. But to me, you never know when it's going to be your final time saying goodbye to your son or your daughter or your mother or your father or your spouse or a neighbor who you love. And the way that your father looked at you that time, like it mattered, having no clue what was coming next, but he knew that that moment mattered. And I think there's something in that for all of us. So now you've wrestled with your father and the loss of him. You've gone to the hospital. You've said your final goodbye. You come back to this hotel in Hawaii that was supposed to be paradise, and now it's the farthest thing from it. It's a prison, man. It's a prison now that is going to always remind you of what you lost. And you're seated on the bed, and your mother comes in.
Yeah, and I was feeling really alone, and our whole family was too, because like we were so far away. And then I'm the one that's having to make these phone calls back. Like my mom wasn't in a spot to call. So now I've had to call my dad's parents. I've had to call his brother, call my dad's work, call our church. And how do you have this conversation? Like to over and over, like tell these people, hey, my dad just drowned. Mm-hmm. Like I never thought that I would be making those phone calls. It was just really emotionally, just like really hard. And then I go back to the back bedroom, and that's when I'm just sitting there just like, God, what is happening here? And that's when my mom appeared in the doorway, and she said, Blake, I found something in your dad's briefcase, something that I know he was going to give you on the trip. And she's holding something, but I have no idea what this is. And so she walks across the room and she handed me a letter from my dad. And apparently he'd been working on this for 2 or 3 months, had no idea that he was about to die, had no idea that this would be his final words to me. And I began to read this letter, and just a sense of peace came over me. and I was comforted by his words. It was as if he was still right there with me. Like I could hear his voice reading this letter. I felt hope. And then John, I felt incredibly loved. Like, do not tell me that my dad didn't love me. Like he took the time to put it down on paper. So as I'm reading this, I get to the final line of this letter. And I really believe God allowed my dad to write this. But he wrote, as you're being faithful to the Bible and being faithful to God, you're often going to find yourself in the minority here on earth. But I assure you that in heaven, you'll be in the majority. Love your dear old dad. And I remember reading that just thinking, man, I'm going to see my dad again. And that line has just stuck with me. It's really shaped my life to just go live for eternal things, like live for that day that I'm going to be in heaven.
There's so many directions to take this, but I think I want to know how reading those words changed the way you felt about your dad or elevated.
There was nothing in that letter that was totally new. My dad talked a lot about how he felt about us, about his faith. He had a lot of Bible verses in there. And so I'm not reading that like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that dad felt this way. But there was just something about reading it. And if anyone listening, like if you've gotten something written down from somebody, there's just like, and I talk to parents all the time, like, yeah, my dad wrote me this little note or my mom wrote me this little note. And you hang on to it. It's like, oh, they chose these words. Like my dad chose these words. Like, did he mean this? Like, yes, he meant it. And I can't imagine my life without this letter, especially in the days and the months after, because I was just feeling so much pain and missing my dad. I never felt grief like this before, and I didn't know how to deal with all that. But I would just keep going back to this letter from my dad and the things that he said, and I would find comfort in that. It really did redirect my life purpose of like, man, what I wanted to live for. Man, I want to live for God, and I want to live for the souls of man. And to even take a step further, I've looked back at like some decisions I could have made to try to numb out the pain that I was feeling, like the drugs, alcohol. I could have easily done those things. And I know other people have. And to be honest, I didn't do any of those things. I really leaned in on my faith, leaned in on with my family. My dad protected me. Like he kept me from going down that road.
So your father protected you. These words comforted you. This vision gave you something that you could cope with the pain as you were moving toward eternal healing. It really gave you a light for your life to follow and to be guided by. But that's just for you. When did you begin sharing this letter and the impact of this letter with others?
Well, we shared with a lot of people, like at the funeral, and I shared with a few friends. But it probably wasn't till that fall. I got back to Arkansas. And I met a guy who worked for campus ministry who began to talk to me about what it looked like to live for God and live for Christ. And I was like, all in. I'm like, oh man, yes, that is what I want. You can help me do that. One day he said, Blake, let's go talk to Malcolm down the hall. I was the RA. And he said, let's go talk to Malcolm about your faith. And I was like, in the inside, I was like, so scared. I was like, man, I do not want to do this. But I was like, but I did. And so we went down. He said, don't worry, I'll do all the talking. Well, we get down there and he's talking to Malcolm and we're talking about the Bible and things like that. And then he says, Blake, why don't you share about your story? And then I was able to talk about, I mean, this is probably like 4 months after my dad died. And I was able to talk about my dad and his letter and his faith and my faith. And I walked away from that conversation like, that was unbelievable. Like I could have been playing basketball or watching TV or studying. I probably wouldn't have been studying, but I just talked to this guy about where he's going to spend eternity. And I got to use my dad and his story in the letter to talk about it. And I was like, I want to do that again. Like I want to keep doing this over and over again.
Keep walking me forward. So this one gentleman in the dorm from his 20-year-old RA is being evangelized and encouraged and loved. And then you do it again, and then you do it again. When does it become something about helping others write their letters?
I did that for 3.5 more years and purposely lived on campus so I could mentor the young college students. And then ended up going on staff with this campus ministry to mentor people. And the whole time I'm like telling people about my dad. And so that like went on for another 12 years. Never in a million years that I have this thought of, oh man, I got to help people write a letter to their kids. Now, I will say there's a lot of times students were having issues with their parents And I was like, you need to write him a letter. Because things get heated and things like you can't get everything out. I'm like, put it down on paper of how you're really feeling and be sweet and nice and kind. And then they would send it to their parents. But then it probably wasn't until I became a dad. I know it wasn't until I became a dad that everything shifted and everything changed. And so my oldest is 8, but it was like 4 or 5 years ago that, and then I had my second and then Brooks, and I was sitting there thinking just like any other parent, and like, man, I want to be a good dad here. And I see the world they're growing up in. And I see the values that the world has that's trying to push onto them that it doesn't line up with my values. I'm like, man, what do I do here? Like, I got to be a good dad. Like, what? I'll write him a letter. And so pulled out a blank sheet of paper, and it was so overwhelming. Like, what the heck am I going to write? But I knew I had to finish. And so I finished that letter. And John, it felt amazing to have that letter done. I'm sure this is probably how you felt when you finished your two books.
I have written love letters to my children. And in some regards, even my book, the second one, is written to the kids. And it's my love letter to them. Now, it's for sale and all great fine book retailers. But the reality is I wrote that as a love letter to the kids. And I've written them many before that and many subsequently. And I know of a lot of folks who don't do that for their kids. And their kids don't know how they feel.
Most people have not written something down. And there's one thing that I realized is there's a lot of people who think they know how their children feel about them. There was one guy who I helped write his legacy letter. And he was like, man, I don't know if I need to do this. My kids know that I love them. But he did it for his 3 adult sons and adult daughter. Finished his legacy letter. And then I gave it on Christmas morning. Of course, his sons loved this letter. Hearing from their dad, I love you. I'm proud of you. I believe in you. But then it was his daughter, 31 years old, young mom. She goes home. She had read the letter. She calls back and she gets mom on the phone because dad had already gone to bed. And she goes, mom, this is the best Christmas I've ever had in my life. And mom's like, well, you know, we love having you guys and we love hosting you. And she goes, no, mom, it was dad's letter. Because I was telling myself that dad did not love me as much as he loves my brothers, because he's always hunting with them and fishing with them and doing sports. But now I read this letter and I get closure. I have closure in my life. Well, I talked to her dad and I said, did you have any idea that your daughter was feeling that way? And he said, man, I had no idea. And he said, the truth is we spent twice as much money on her as the boys. What I've learned from that, like, we're all telling ourselves a story about how we feel. Our children, and then they're telling themselves a story about how they think we feel about them. And there's no way the story lines up perfectly. And so that's why this legacy letter is so important, because it's getting the story right.
You have a process for helping get the story right. Speak to a couple themes that are important within these letters. And then I'm going to ask you around why we don't do it. But let's talk about what should be in these letters first.
Well, we developed a process because I knew everybody was going to be like me. So after I finished my kid's letter, I was like, it just hit me one day. It's like, man, I got to do whatever I can to help more people write this letter, receive this letter. But I knew everyone would be like me, like looking at a blank sheet of paper, like, okay, what do I do? And most people don't have time to go research. Like, I've met people, to be honest, who've said they've written a letter and it wasn't received very well, or it didn't have the impact that they wanted it to have. And so they don't have time to go research everything that needs to be said. So we create this process. There's the intro paragraph. And so like this, setting the stage, setting the table for what's in there, the apology section. And I love helping people do an apology. And the apology section is so important because you have such an amazing things to share with your children. But if they can't receive it, if there's a wall that's been built between you and them, and this happens all the time, things have been said and done. And so we're like, we got to break down that wall. And then there's the I love you section, the I'm proud of you, I believe in you. And then the memories, and then the advice section, and then the closing paragraph.
I think out of all of those sections, the only one I want to hover over and then dig a little bit deeper into is the apology section. Because, okay, and I know when you guide folks through the exercise, this is not where you start. It's not step 2.
Yeah.
In the sentence, I am sorry for, fill in the blank. But talk about, first of all, why do we who love these children so much struggle so much apologizing for not being there, for the words we said, for the words we did not say, for the mistakes we've made? Why do we struggle so much articulating that to our loved ones?
Man, nobody wants to admit that they're wrong or that they've made mistakes. Or we want to make excuses. We want to say, well, yeah, I could have done better, but I was trying my best. And I tell parents, like, that's what you can tell them. Like, hey, I was trying my best, but I realized, like, I made mistakes and I could have done better. And you might just have a general apology. And you're not necessarily specifically apologizing for certain things. You just kind of have this general apology. And I tell them, most people are not getting this from their dad or their mom. Like, for you to write this down and to say this is just so powerful. But then there is a lot of people who have some specific things they need to apologize for. And so we have five, I walk them through five ways to do that apology really well. Because you can mess up an apology too. Like, if you don't own it, if you try to come across as the victim, it's like, no, you got to own it. You got to express that you understand. Everybody wants to be understood. And so you got to really try to show some empathy. And especially as your kids get older, like, your kids have some things they need to apologize for. And I say, you don't want to bring that up. Like, if you bring up what they need to apologize for, it'll mess up the whole letter. And so you just apologize for what you can.
So I made a list in preparing for today of reasons why I and others will choose not to do this letter writing exercise.
Okay, let's hear it.
So reason number one, and I want you to speak to these and tell me and us why we're wrong. Number one, my kids already know I love them.
They might know that you love them, but you'd be surprised if you could peek into their mind, like, what they're really thinking. And then you can never tell them enough that you love them, because every time that you tell them, and when they fully know that it's unconditional, that they're not earning your love. There's nothing that they can do to, like, lose your love. Like, there's just so much confidence that someone has in their life when they fully know this. And then for me, if I ever have a wayward thought of, like, man, did my dad really love me? I can go back and read it.
Right.
And so, like, your kids might know that you love them today, but, like, what happens a week from now or 2 weeks from now when a big blow up happens? And then they start to maybe have some doubts, maybe subconsciously. Like, so for me, I think a good example in this, anyone who has a faith, it's like, man, okay, I know that God loves me. And then I go to church on Sunday, or I get in the scriptures, and then I'm reminded again of how much God loves me. And I'm like, oh man, I needed that reminder. And it changes my whole day when I am reminded of how much God loves me. Like, there's just a sense of, like, comfort and confidence that comes with that. So if I need to be reminded of that God loves me, then it's like, okay, I need to be reminded that my loved ones or my parents love me as well.
What about this one? My kids are too old. They're not like your little babies. They're not 19 like you were. Maybe they're 28 or 35 or 47. My kids are just too old.
You're never too old to get this letter. People write this letter there was a 9-year-old lady on the call a couple weeks ago. There was a guy, well, he was 75, and he came up and told me, he goes, man, I'll never forget when my dad told me that he loved me, and he was 55. And man, it was so meaningful in that moment, 55-year-old man, that his dad loved him. I got to share about what Terry Bradshaw told me. I was interviewing him about his fatherhood journey. He said, man, my dad never told me that he loved me. And he said, he was a hard man. Like, I don't have any memory of him playing catch with me in the front yard. But he said, after I retired from football, so, like, Bradshaw was, like, in his 40s at this time, he said, I bought a cattle ranch. And my dad was a rancher. And we bonded. And he said, one day I looked at my dad and I said, Dad, I know that you love us, but I've never heard you say it. And I just want to hear you say it. Like, that's a lot of courage to be able to say that to your dad. So, like, good for Bradshaw to say that. Well, his dad said, well, you know that I love you guys. And Bradshaw said, I know that you love us, but I want to hear you say it. And so his dad told him for the first time. People ask me, like, when is the best time to write this letter? I tell people the best time to write is the day your kids are born. So they have something written down, because you don't know when your last day is going to be. You got to have something written down. The second best time, it's kind of like planting a tree. The best time was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. So whatever your situation is right now, however old your kids are, it's now. And then the final thought, I encourage people to give this letter right as soon as possible. But the second you die, this letter becomes that much more valuable. And I talked to so many people that they were going through the house, like, looking for, surely there's a letter here somewhere. And there wasn't. And they were so hurt by it. And so no matter how old you are, like, your kids are going to grieve your death. Yes. And so this letter is a way to help them grieve and some words to hang on to.
The third excuse I gave for our listeners right now is the relationship is too sour. It's too strained. It's completely non-existent. So to our friends right now, and this pains me to even ask, because I know there's so many of us out there who don't have a relationship with our kids. Or, and by the way, some of us are listening who don't have children, but they're thinking about a spouse or a parent or a loved one. They don't have a relationship with that person, though. What would you say to them? There is no relationship there.
There's a lot of people who are experiencing parental alienation, or they're estranged from their kids. And it's like this dad that was writing it recently, he said, man, I haven't talked to my daughter in 4 years. And I want her to come home, and I want her to know that I love her. And this letter gave him hope that she would come home. There's so many different situations and reasons why people don't have a relationship. It is worth it to battle. Mm-hmm. I tell people, I'm like, man, we work hard to provide for our children, but we go to battle to win their hearts. And writing this letter is a battle for some people, for a lot of us. But as parents, and I know, like you said, people are writing to other people as well, but man, we want to go to battle to pursue the hearts of our children and our loved ones. And I'll say this, though, we're not guaranteed that this letter is going to have the effect that you want. Like some people, their children or whoever they're writing to receive it, and they're like, there's hugs, there's tears, like, I needed this letter. And then there's other people that it's like, okay, cool letter. Yeah. And I tell people, some of your children are not at a spot in their life where they can fully appreciate this letter, their maturity level or whatever. And then some people will not get to experience the joy of this. They're going to be like my dad. They don't get to experience the joy in seeing the impact of this letter, this side of heaven. My dad didn't. And some people will be like that.
The final excuse I gave for all of our listeners on why they probably won't do this is either I don't have time or I'm a lousy writer. And those things probably coalesce a little bit. So they're looking at a blank piece of white paper, and they're looking down or up at their children, and they're a lousy writer. They just don't have time. How would you respond to those two excuses?
My first thought was, man, you don't have time not to write this letter. Nobody wants to leave their children empty-handed. I'm so glad that my dad did not wait a couple more months. No one knows when their last day is going to be. But this is one reason why we create the Legacy Letter Challenge, is because there's a lot of people who are not great writers. There's a lot of people looking at the blank sheet of paper. Well, we have workshops every other week where people can join in, and we equip them to write this legacy letter. I promise you, if someone's not a good writer and it's just not written good, it will be better than nothing at all. You're not trying to write a New York Times bestseller here, like John. your kids want to hear your heart. It does not have to be some well-written, polished letter. But if you get some words down, telling them how much you love them and how proud you are of them. So every other Thursday night, we're going live, and we do a 90-minute workshop, and people from all over the country join in. But I want to invite everybody that's listening, anyone who is friends with John, to join for free. And so you go to legacyletter.com/workshop, you pick a date, sign in, and man, we're going to help you write your legacy letter.
So I'm going to be joining that, and we're going to have a date at the end of this call that I'm going to specifically attract people into, because I want to not only have them join us, but I want to join them. I have written letters for my kids. I've written letters to my parents and to my wife, but I haven't written one lately. And I'm looking forward to being on this call with you and learning your process and making sure I get this thing, my heart, onto a page. More on that at the end of this podcast. Stick around for that one. I'm curious, though, before O'Leary and our followers and listeners and viewers tune in and make their letters, what's a bit of feedback that you received? And give me a specific case, not just like, oh, they loved it and et cetera. Was there a story or a letter you received, an email you received, a voicemail you received from someone who did this exercise, gave this letter, and then reached out to you afterwards and reminded you of the power of this thing?
It's like, which one do I tell you?
Yeah.
There was a dad who finished it a couple of weeks ago, and it was a divorce situation, and his son's in junior high. And he wrote the letter and he emailed it to him. And then the next morning he woke up to a post and he had no idea how his son was going to respond. He said, man, we're on pretty good terms, but I just never know. And he woke up and his son had made a post on Instagram a dad appreciation post about how much he loved his dad. And he said, man, he's never talked about me on social media. And so just that immediate response of, oh man, like he's like, man, it melted my heart. There was another dad who finished this letter and he gave it to his son. He gave it to his two sons. They're in their 20s. This guy was in the military. And he gives it to him on Christmas morning. And they open it up. And John, they were not expecting to get a letter for Christmas. Like they're like wanting something like maybe a little cooler, maybe a little more tangible than that. So he said, hey, you can go read it. Well, they went back and read it and they came back the next day. And he's expecting like this really good response. And he said, all they did was walk up and say, hey, Dad, thanks for the letter. And he was like, man, that's all they're going to say. Like I poured my heart and soul into that thing. A couple more months, didn't hear anything. Then 6 months goes by. And his buddy calls him and says, hey, Jeff, I was just hanging out with your son. Your son told me that you wrote him a letter this past Christmas. Your son shared with me that it's his most treasured possession, that he reads it every single week, sometimes multiple times a week. Jeff had no idea. And so I said, Jeff, he, you know, he let me know about this. I said, can I call your son? I called his son. And he said, man, the first time I read that letter from my dad was the closest I'd ever felt to him in my life. And so that's the power of this legacy letter that we're writing.
Well, I'm going to give individuals one more excuse to write one. A friend of mine named William Paul Young wrote a letter to his kids, and he wasn't sure how to frame it up properly because he didn't have a guy like you guiding him through the process. So he just wrote this long, rambling, eventual book that he called The Shack. And he gave it to his kids for Christmas, and their kids shared this love letter with a few of their friends who shared it with a few friends. It eventually was picked up, published, and it has sold, I think, more than 15 million copies.
Wow.
Because a father didn't know how to tell his kids that he was sorry for some mistakes he'd made. So he wrote a letter about grace and called it The Shack. So anyway, there's 12 million reasons why to write this letter, but start. So at the very end of the call, we're going to give you a way that you can begin this process with us. I'm looking forward to beginning this process with you. There's one more impact that this letter had on your life, though. Your life. The letter that your father wrote you impacted the way that you guided your sister through her wedding. A little girl grows up dreaming of Prince Charming, I would imagine, and the weather being just right and the dress fitting just right and the flowers looking just right and the trains on the chairs fitting just right and all that stuff that really, really doesn't matter. But what does matter is who's there with her, and they want their dad. And your sister didn't have her dad, but she invited you to participate in this wedding. And tell me how that letter helped influence the way you showed up for your sister.
John, you're going to get me emotional talking about this. My sister called me a few years ago and she said, Blake, I'm engaged and I'm going to get married and I want you to officiate the wedding. And what a huge honor for me to be able to officiate my sister's wedding. But the whole time I was just thinking how much my dad would have loved to have been there and be at this wedding and how much my sister would have loved my dad to be there to walk her down the aisle. But I got to take words from my dad's letter and bring it into the ceremony and be able to bless my sister and her new husband, Matt. And my dad was there.
He was there and he is there. And I'm so grateful that he decided to spend 2 to 3 months of his life occasionally dipping his toe into letting his children and his son know how much they are loved. Look who came with me, I think are the final words your dad spoke to you this side of eternity. Look who came with me. And I'm glad, my friend, that you chose to come with them and that you still are. We wrap up every one of our Live Inspired podcasts with 7 questions. These are questions that tether all of our guests together. They're called the Live Inspired 7. Question number 1 is, what's been the most impactful book you've ever read?
I've got to say the Bible. I don't know if that's a cop out, but the Bible has changed my life, and I believe it's the living, breathing Word of God.
Is there a specific book within, you know, it's a kind of big book. I'm actually reading it through this year, and it's verbose, man. You got to really invest the time to read through the Bible. So is there a specific book within it that you would recommend people go to?
I'll say the book of John. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the four gospels. And so those are the stories about Jesus's life. And so whenever you read those stories and see the grace that Jesus had on people and how he loved people, I just love reading those stories.
What's one positive characteristic or one trait that you possessed as a little kid in Louisiana, then Texas, then Oklahoma, that you wish you exhibited as brilliantly today?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Just childlike wonder. I see this in my kids now. Like, you just want wonder and it questions and everything amazes you, which, to be honest, I still get pretty amazed to this day by creation.
Me too. If your home caught fire and all living things are out, your children, your animals, but you have an opportunity of running in and grabbing one item, what's the one physical thing you would come racing back outside with?
Well, I think we might know what the answer is based on our conversation today, but I would run in and grab my dad's letter.
Is it handwritten or typed?
That's a great question. So my dad's letter was typed. And I tell people, man, I'm so grateful it was typed because I could actually read it. But a lot of people handwrite it. I tell people, hey, whatever gets you a finished letter faster, choose that one.
Right on. If you could sit on a bench on a gorgeous day and have a long conversation with anyone living or deceased, who would you wish to be seated next to?
It's hard not to say my dad, because we've been sitting here talking about him and like he's fresh on my mind. And man, there's so many things I want to tell my dad and just show him, like, dad, look at the impact that your letter had. John, there's been times where I've had like a dream. And my dad's in the dream. I wake up from the dream. Like in the dream, it's like me and my dad. And I wake up and like for just like half a second, I'm like, wait, was that real? And so I cherish those dreams.
Well, a 19-year-old kid walking down the beach right behind your dad, and he's this big built guy, turns around, gives you that smile on that bench. What's the one thing you wish you would have said to him? So if you could just sit down next to him and say, dad, I hope you know this from me. What would that be?
I'm grateful. Now that I'm a dad, I see all the work and the things that a dad or mom, like the things they carry on the burden that they carry. And as a 19-year-old kid, I didn't recognize that or understand that. And so if I could go back and in that moment, I would tell my dad how much I appreciated him and the sacrifice that he had for our family.
What's the best advice your dad, your mother, some pastor, friend, college professor, anybody ever gave you? So the best advice you've ever received, Blake, is?
Live for things that matter.
What would you tell your 20-year-old self? This kid still mourning the loss of his dad at Arkansas. What advice does he need to hear?
Just keep pressing on. As long as you, every single day, if you are just being faithful to God, faithful to your family, faithful to what you've been called to do. Not that you and there's moments where you're not even sure what you're called to do, but just be faithful every day to just keep going forward and life will be okay.
Blake Brewer, it has been said that all great people can have their lives summed up in one sentence. How would you like yours to read?
Blake Brewer was faithful to God, to his family, and to what he was called to do.
Blake Brewer, thank you for being faithful to God, to his family, and to what you were called to do. Thank you for showing up, for walking behind your dad, and now for teaching the rest of us how we can make sure our kids, our loved ones, recognize how much we love them. It is a critically important lesson, one that I'm looking forward to continuing forward with you.
Well, I appreciate you, John. Thanks for having me on today, and I love everything that you're about and appreciate you being faithful to what you're called to do and all the people you serve and help.
My friends, you're listening to the great voice and life now of Blake Brewer and his friend, John O'Leary. I want to thank you all for tuning in this time. And until next time, my name is John O'Leary, and today is your day. What a gift. Don't miss it. Live inspired.
Well, my friends, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. It was an emotional one with Blake Brewer as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. So here it is. Not only an incredible conversation with a remarkable man, but an opportunity for you to join us this month on the Live Inspired Together call. It's going to be Monday, May 6th at 4 p.m. Central Time. Blake is going to be joining us on that episode. You will have an invitation to join us on that episode. There will be absolutely no charge for you to be there with us during this episode, and it is an opportunity for you to better get to know our guest, Blake, his process for writing this letter, and a chance for you to spend dedicated time to do exactly that. I know many of you tune in month after month for our Live Inspire Together calls. If you've joined us in the past, join us again this month. If you've never joined us before, make time. Take an opportunity, that is this moment in time, to join Blake Brewer and John O'Leary on the Live Inspired Podcast Together call. Where can you learn more about this? How can you sign up? How can you make sure you're on that Zoom call with us? Well, I'm glad you asked. Go to my website. It is at johnoleary.com/together. That's where you and I together will learn how to write this letter for the ones we care for so deeply. So join me right now. Go ahead. I'll wait. johnolearyinspires.com/together. When you arrive, there will be a link for you to join us on the Zoom call. Again, it is going to be Monday, May 6th at 4 p.m. Central Time. Blake will join me. I'll be on the episode. We'll have other friends gathered through Zoom, and hopefully you. It's a chance, brothers and sisters, family and friends, to set aside 60 minutes in creating your very own legacy letter for someone that you care deeply for. Here's your chance to let them know. So family, friends, leaders, and servants, for this time and until next time, or if we are so fortunate to meet live on the Zoom call, May 6th, 4 o'clock Central, I'm looking forward to doing life with you together. I'm grateful that you are part of our Live Inspired podcast, and I know that the foundation is firm, the headwind is real, and that the best is yet to come. So for this time, and until that time, my name is John O'Leary. Today's your day. What a gift. Live Inspired.
You know that Keeley Companies is all about fostering the world-class culture through their incredible cultural pillars. Well, it was time to add a seventh cultural pillar, Keeley Green. Guided by the mission to raise the sustainability standards by which they design, build, operate, and live, Keeley Green is dedicated to using a holistic approach to leave a positive impact on our environment, create a future that is sustainable for generations to come. In the words of Rusty Keeley, we are just getting started. You can learn more about that just getting started mentality and all the work they do by visiting my friends at Keeley Companies online at keeleycompanies.com.